Hi, you are listening to a free Majority Report. If you would like to become a member, please go to majority.fm.
Yes, Amy.
Oh, my name's Janine Garofalo. How are you?
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, May 24th, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. On the program today, it's Casual Friday. Cliff Schechter will be joining us. Back from a well-deserved week off. Was that just a week ago? My God. Also on the program today, famed comedian Todd Barry will be here to give us a movie review. On the show today, President Obama, following his Department of Justice, or I guess his Attorney General, sending out a letter discussing the drone program, follows up with a major national security speech wherein he discusses the investigations of journalists, the use of drones, and the disposition matrix, in not so many words. Guantanamo Bay and the authorization for use of military force going forward. It's being hailed as a rather... Whoa. Wow, we're a little rusty on the board today. What happened there, Matt? Yes, you got to turn up your volume.
Yes, I think it's my computer, actually.
Oh, all right. The speech has been hailed as... it's being hailed as sort of a pivot point on our national security. And well, we'll talk to Cliff and see if that's actually the case. Also on the program today, your phone calls. And I have a name drop Friday, finally, after ages. Just hung out with Henry Rollins for his new TV show. All that and more today, ladies and gentlemen, on the program. Michael's saying that this was a pivot back to how he ran on security in 2008, and certainly from a rhetorical standpoint, it would certainly indicate that. The reality may be a little different, but we will talk to Cliff Schechter. Why this? Why now? We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking to Cliff Schechter. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. Now, before we get to Cliff Schechter, of course, Cliff Schechter's theme song.
Cliff Shack Dives, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Shack Dives, Libertas LLC.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's Cliff Schechter from LibertasLLC.com. Cliff, hello, how are you?
I am doing well. How are you, sir?
I'm well. We missed you last week. I know you you need to take a vacation, but where did you go? Did you go to the Bahamas? Were you gallivanting in the Caribbean, or was it the Swiss Alps this time?
Well, whenever I go away, I do gallivant. It's something I'm personally fond of. This time I was gallivanting with my family to Washington, D.C., and then even a day in beloved New York City. We took the Amtrak up and back, but it really was about seeing my family and then going and seeing some friends from all those years we lived in the lovely Beltway of Washington.
Now, did you take your kids to the various monuments, as it were?
Well, you know, we wanted to take them to the FDR one and be like, hey, look, that's back when we had a democracy.
Yes.
You know, that was back before corporations controlled our country. And then we took them, you know. My son was like, why is everything named after Washington here? Which I thought was a valid question.
Yeah.
And we were like, you know, he's the dude that gave up the crown, as opposed to all the guys we have today who I'm sure would all just put the crown down.
Indeed.
And so, we did all that stuff to the mall. They went to the zoo because theoretically the zoo is really good there. Although there was a period of time when I lived in Washington where, like, there was an animal dying at that zoo every month, it seemed like. So I don't know. I don't know what's in the food there.
How is the zoo? Do the kids like the zoo?
They dug it, yeah. Right. Yeah, you know, kids, animals tend to go well together.
All right, well.
I mean, not quite in the same physical space. Like, we wouldn't put them in with the tigers, but tempted at moments.
I understand. I understand that that impetus. As I sit here, it completely exhausted.
No, we love them, of course. In all honesty, I can make fun of it. It was a good trip, and it was just good to sort of not work for the most part for a few days.
All right, so
that was nice.
Well, I'm glad that we could be a part of not being that work. Now,
as if this show could ever really be work, Sam.
Yes, indeed. Now, Cliff, big speech yesterday, President Obama, the speech itself was a major address. It was also sort of amazing in that it was protested and interrupted by Medea Benjamin of Code Pink. And
yes,
what was also a pretty stunning exchange. You rarely see. All right, well, let's. Should we start? Well, let's start with that, the actual speech, and then we'll get to the Medea Benjamin things, because it was pretty dramatic in the sense that I don't know that I've ever seen such a speech where the president actually stopped, and instead of pretending like it wasn't going on and waiting for security just to usher the protester out, he actually listened to her, which was impressive. You know what? Let's start with that. I want to play you the clip, and Matt will make sure that you can hear it, of when President Obama was interrupted by Medea Benjamin. This happened towards the end of the speech.
Yep.
Let's roll this clip. Let's roll this clip.
So, let me finish, man. Good. So today, once again, today. I'm about to address it, ma'am, but you got to let me speak. I'm about to address it. Let me address it. Why don't you let me address it, ma'am? Why don't you sit down and I will tell you exactly what I'm going to do.
That includes 57 Yemenis.
Thank you, ma'am.
It includes Shakir Amr.
Thank you. Thank you. Ma'am, thank you. You should let me finish my sentence. the voice of that woman is worth paying attention to. Obviously, I do not agree with much of what she said. And obviously, she wasn't listening to me in much of what I said. But these are tough issues.
And later in the speech, she interrupts again, and she's actually exiting for almost a minute. The president was silent, listening to what she had to say in regards specifically to al-Awlaki's son and the killing of al-Awlaki's son by U.S.
Right.
drones. And in fact, President Obama did go on to address Guantanamo Bay. He never, though, however, addressed the killing of the three Americans that were, according to Holder's letter, not specifically targeted.
Right.
And I got into a couple of Twitter exchanges about from Obama bots, essentially, that it was rude for her to do this. And it just seemed to be just a very strange response to that protest. He himself said her voice deserves to be heard.
Yep.
And I commend the president for not trying to speak over her or to, you know, and the people there for not yanking her out of the room. It was just sort of fascinating to see the response to her protest, because we all remember the RNC. There were multiple cold pink people who were pulled out of the RNC in the middle of President Bush's speech. And I just don't recall that response.
Well, she's been doing this for a long time. I mean, you know, I know Medea Benjamin, so let's start with that just as a disclosure. I mean, we're not close, but I do know her. And, you know, she's passionate about this. She believes strongly in what she believes, and credit to be given. You know, I mean, yeah, look, is she interrupting an address? She is. But sometimes this is what is necessary to get issues heard. I don't think all this stuff is as black and white as a lot of people, let's say, try to make it out to be. And so to say, oh, my God, she's wrong for bringing it up, and she's wrong for interrupting him. No, I mean, these issues need to be discussed, and a lot of us feel like they're discussed only in certain executive circles.
Yeah.
And obviously, ever since, 2001, we've been on a path where so much power has been consolidated in the executive branch when it comes to anything remotely related to national security, or I'd put that in quotes. Some of it really is national security. Some of it's just what somebody chooses to be to make national security, right? This has to be addressed. I'll give credit to President Obama. My concern with him is that he's given lots of great speeches in the past and then not followed up.
Right. I want to get into the substance of the speech in a moment, but I will say, in terms of the efficacy of her protest, and the idea that it was somehow disrespectful to President Obama. First, I would say I didn't think that she was disrespectful. I mean, she. I guess if protest is in some ways disrespectful inherently, then to that extent it was. But this is not someone who was getting up there saying, you're a liar, you're a baby killer. She was introducing topics that rarely get discussed on a national platform. And I was watching CNN right after the speech, and Jake Tapper had to address the killing of al-Awlaki's son.
Right.
In a way that I don't think would have been addressed, frankly.
And let's be honest, she didn't throw a shoe at him, so
right.
At least there's that.
Right. I wanted to introduce that way, and then let's talk about
Let me say quickly, and again, like, I don't feel like I've heard the whole exchange with her and him, even though I wasn't watching it live. I've obviously Twitter saw blowing up over the whole thing. I've heard clips like I did on your show. And again, I feel like I don't want to lose any of what I feel like there's nuance in these things to a black and white interpretation of it. I feel like she had absolutely every right to do what she did, and I'm glad she did what she did. And then, to me, what I would do is I'd bring up those issues, I would yell, and then I would let him talk and address them. What I'm saying is I'm not saying that's not what she did. Maybe she did do that. I'm not sure because I didn't catch the whole thing. So I would need someone like you to tell me more.
Well, but I mean, she didn't necessarily give – I mean, she did in that instance. Obviously, he went on to talk about Guantanamo. But it was quite clear, and the president transitioned after – she was yelling about Al-Awlaki's son, transitioned right almost seamlessly back into his speech. He was not going to address these things. So, I mean, ultimately, there was no way to anticipate that he would address any of it. And I don't know that he really went off script as much as people seem to think he did.
I read the speech, you know, and I, as I said, I caught clips of it. I read the speech, and from everything I've heard and seen, it was pretty much what he was going to say, which is why I know what he said. You know, and that in and of itself, you're right. I'm not sure he went way off. You know, but I don't think I'm known on your show as an Obama defender. At least he acknowledged that people should listen to her and take her concerns seriously, and that there are concerns there. So again, like I feel like there's a lot of people who jump on Twitter, whether it's your people you're talking about, the reflexive Obama defenders on one side, but then there's the reflexive civil libertarians on the other side who go after Obama no matter what he says. And again, I think there is some nuance in this whole thing.
Yes.
I guess we're going to get to the policies and the issues. You know, people bring up the fact again that of the current world we're living in, and to pretend that we can just trust in an executive, the kind of power that the executive now has when it comes to wiretapping, when it comes to Gitmo, when it comes to drones, to me is insane. Okay. On the other hand, there are people, I think, who also sit there, and believe me, I'm not trying to do one of these Washington on one hand, on the other hand things, because, you know, I don't do false equivalency BS. This is what I honestly think, looking at this issue. On the other hand, we do have to acknowledge, you know, that what happened on September 11th in 2001, and that there are people who, if they could, would do that very often to us. You know, and that we have to, that we do have to find a way to have a national security apparatus that protects us and that targets bad people with as much due process as we can have. And I don't think there's any easy answer. I think sometimes there are people who go after President Obama who try to, you know, from the left, frankly, who try to claim that there's just easy answers to this. And I mean, there are some things that are clear. You don't kill somebody's son because they're related to somebody who is a bad guy. All right, so Al-Awlaki's son, that is utterly – I mean, to me, that's murder, quite frankly. All right, and that's clear. When it comes to you know, do you go in and try to arrest bin Laden or not? Do you drone Al-Awlaki, who is an American but is committing treason? I think that's less clear than some people make it out to be, quite frankly. And I think the use of drones, you know, in some cases may be called for. But we need some sort of oversight. It's sort of a more deadly kind of method of what we were doing when we let the CIA go run rampant from the 50s to the 70s before the Church Committee looked into what they were doing. When we were busy kicking out, you know, guys we didn't like in Iran and Chile and places like that, which of course had no blowback whatsoever. Not to mention just the morality.
Right.
Of doing that, of involving ourselves in other countries. And so the drones, what I don't like is when people act like the drones are something in and of themselves. They're an extension of this kind of argument and this debate that's been needed in a democracy for a long time now.
Let's get back to the drones, because I want to take this from the sort of like the most straightforward to the more complicated, and what he said during the drone segment, I think you know, is far less transparent than he's given credit for in some respects. It also, you know, based upon other reports, there was really some inaccurate information that was disseminated. But let's start first with the authorization for use of military force, because there's two different narratives that you can postulate in terms of the Obama administration. One narrative is that he got into office, there was this massive apparatus that part of which seduced him and part of which overran him. in some respects. And part of which he also, you know, sort of made a determination that these, the assessments I had as a senator are different than I have as a president, that we have to do certain things. And now he's come to a point where, you know, he's gone sort of Bullworth to the extent that he can go Bullworth, right?
And right. And let's say something quickly, which is let's not pretend that, and you're, I'm not saying you are, let's all of us not pretend that the Beltwayism, for lack of a better word, hasn't influenced that the way it has influenced him on Social Security, for example, and other issues.
Right. Let's put that aside. Let's put that aside.
Do this. And I think in certain cases where his instincts may have been, I would hope as a constitutional lawyer, but maybe not, to have been more of a civil libertarian, he's just sort of said, well, this is what all the serious people are in favor of. So,
right.
Or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe
right,
he doesn't
right.
have those
Well,
instincts.
That's what I'm saying. There's two different narratives. And then one is that, you know, his trusted advisor, Brennan, basically, you know, there's a story that, you know, that, the killing of al-Awlaki's son was okayed, but outside of Brennan's purview. And there's this notion of this runaway apparatus, and now he's trying to get a hold of it. Okay.
Yep.
And then there's, another narrative that is basically, yes, he wanted to just, he just had a sort of more Rumsfeldian vision of what America should be. In other words, lighter footprint, but more security apparatus, more crackdowns on whistleblowers, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. And let's be clear there. This is something he's chosen to do, when it comes to the whistleblowers, when it comes to obviously what has happened with the AP. They, I mean, if it wasn't him, certainly, or what, we don't know the whole story right now, but Holder. And that's what they've done with going after, like, some people who are, you know, who are growing pot. That stuff's disgraceful.
Right.
So don't, let's be very
and
clear.
And we'll get to that because he mentioned, at least in the context of the AP and the Rosen case, the Fox News case, the investigation into the State Department leaker, he also sort of alluded to anyways. But let's start at the authorization of use of military force, because in many respects, that law passed after 9/11 is from which all of
that's
this
the mothership, so to speak,
yes.
of how we got to, yeah, that's exactly right.
Exactly.
And that's what I think that's perfect, Sam, because that's when people just sort of make it one aspect of this as if it's not part of a greater whole is when I get frustrated, because this is a greater whole and a debate and a discussion we need to have in a democracy.
And people should understand that so much of what we talk about today is problematic emanates out of the authorization provided there, which was very broad and open-ended in many respects.
That's right.
Now,
and as Obama, you know, seemed to hint or say that needs to come to an end. But obviously,
let's play the audio. Let's play the audio of this. Okay. It's clip number two.
And that is why I intend to engage Congress about the existing authorization to use military force, or AUMF, to determine how we can continue to fight terrorism without keeping America on a perpetual wartime footing. The AUMF is now nearly 12 years old. The Afghan war is coming to an end. Khor al-Qaeda is a shell of its former self. Groups like AQAP must be dealt with, but in the years to come, not every collection of thugs that labels themselves al-Qaeda will pose a credible threat to the United States. Unless we discipline our thinking, our definitions, our actions, we may be drawn into more wars we don't need to fight, or continue to grant presidents unbound powers more suited for traditional armed conflicts between nation states. So I look forward to engaging Congress and the American people in efforts to refine and ultimately repeal the AUMF's mandate. And I will not sign laws designed to expand this mandate further. Our systematic effort to dismantle terrorist organizations must continue. But this war, like all wars, must end. That's what history advises. That's what our democracy demands.
Now, this is in the main pretty encouraging. It would have been great to hear this in 2009, and then we have 5 years to wind this thing down. But yeah. But that said, this is coming, and one of the things that has sort of really baffled me, and I have yet to really hear a great explanation for this, and we haven't quite seen the reporting, is why this speech now? And, you know, it could be just this is what his agenda was for the beginning of the second term. But it could be because there's been talk in the Senate, in the House of expanding and extending the the authorization. We heard somebody from the Defense Department testify in front of the Senate this past week, I think it was, maybe last week, saying this could go on for another 10, 20 years. He seems to, at the very least, I mean,
why not 100, as McCain said?
Right. Well, exactly. But the real question is, you know, there's obviously pressure that is building in some factions. And I think, you know,
well, and some, don't forget, some of this is managing the news cycle and has to do with the AP, because he talked about a press shield law too, which is exactly the opposite of what his administration has been doing. There's legislation there to do that, by the way, and they haven't,
yes.
And, you know, it hasn't been enacted. You know, and obviously,
but he doesn't need to say that. I mean, he doesn't need to say, because the idea that this is, should not be a perpetual war, I refuse to extend or expand the authorization of use of military force. We should begin to wind it down, and then we should repeal it. That cuts against what he's saying about maintaining our drone program. That cuts against what he's saying about, you know, on some level about the leaks. So he doesn't need to say this per se, but for, you know, the pressure, I think, that is being brought to bear by, you know, bigger amplification of the conversations that we have, and I'm not saying the conversations, but these conversations are reflected in other circles, and so this in some respects to me is encouraging, and it hopefully this part, because it is the wellspring of all of so much more of this, because this is the one that basically says we're still in the global war on terror, even
right.
though they
but I think
sort of,
even the speech, Sam's important because again, because of the lack of laws, for lack of a better, I don't know if that's the right word, but constraints on executive power when it comes to these matters, the culture that you create and the country creates is so important there.
Yes.
Wherever there's a lack of kind of law and regulation, you know, what's going to define what people do and think they can get away with and think is okay is culture. And I think that you know, you see Rand Paul get up and do that performance on drones, a month, 2 months, 3 months back, which I'd be interested now to see if he were to go to Rand Paul, which is what I would advise him to do, if he's serious about it, then let's see if Rand Paul is willing to join in this and see if it was all hat and no cattle, so to speak,
uh-huh.
with Rand Paul, which I suspect it was. But, you know, it's still important to set certain parameters. And his administration, for the first 5 years of it, has helped push even further. We've talked about whistleblowers and the rest, and there's still we're still wiretapping, you know, without warrants, which is, there's, again, another thing there's absolutely no excuse for. When you have the FISA courts that can retroactively say that's okay 72 hours later, or no, you shouldn't, why that can't work in a democracy, no one has explained to me. So, you know, there are things here that I wish he'd gotten into more detail and say, you know, no more warrantless wiretapping. You know, no, Gitmo, I know he addressed it, but we must close it immediately. As well, that, you know, there are things like that to me that are actually pretty easy calls. But then when we're talking about drones or really any kind of attack, because again, let's remember, you know, I don't remember if it was 1998, it must have been, because the Republicans accused Clinton of trying to detract from, you know, or move away from Monica Lewinsky. Clinton lobbed a couple of missiles into some tents in you know, Afghanistan and just missed killing bin Laden. Well, as far as I know, he didn't sit down with any congressional body to get authorization to do that.
Right.
So whether it's drones or missiles, that's why I don't want the conversation. I mean, I know drones are the newest, most high-tech way, and they're more dangerous in a way because somebody can sit in somewhere in a bunker like they're playing a video game and use them. At the same time, it's not like we haven't launched attacks
right.
on people before
right.
without getting
right.
authorization.
But the real issue, and let's talk about drones. The real issue with drones is twofold, and it's not the technology. It's that we never lobbed a missile, okay, into a specific country. First of all, that missile was in the Sudan. Clinton was criticized for not lobbing a missile into Afghanistan at that time.
Are you now, sure? I'm pretty sure at the time we just missed bin Laden. I know we hit the Sudan too. I thought the time we just missed bin Laden was,
oh, was
in
it both. Okay,
yeah,
all right,
Afghanistan.
All right.
Was it in the Sudan?
All right. Well, I think it was both. But
okay.
The real issue is that. That is specific intelligence, that someone who is on a list who has done something, we have lobbed a missile in an attempt to kill them. The
yep.
issue with drones, put aside the sort of scary technological aspect, is twofold. One is that we have a program of assassination where we do not have of American citizens, where we do not have a traditional notion of due process.
Right.
And let's put that one aside for a second. The other one is the notion of signature strikes, which is fairly unprecedented as far as I know, which is that we don't know who we're hitting. We just simply know that they fit the profile of people we should be hitting.
Well, and that's indefensible and terrible.
And,
what I'm talking about here is what Clinton did, and that,
right,
yeah, if we
right,
get back
but,
to that,
but,
where you've got a specific, or, you know, Reagan trying to,
right.
after the terrorist act in Libya, where you've got a specific person you are targeting because they've committed an act against the United States. And frankly, I would even be much happier. I know that in the speech, Obama said maybe there should be a secret court that reviews this. That would make me a lot happier. You know, you could say Congress, but does anybody feel better if the Intelligence Committee with Michelle Bachmann on it says that something's okay?
Right.
Quite frankly, at this point in time, I would rather have it, although Louis Gohmert was a judge, so maybe I feel no better. But, and so is Jeff Sessions, for that matter.
But now, here's the problem.
But a judicial body that could say, you know, but sometimes if they need to act immediately, the question is how you compile this list, and I think a list should have to have, you know, a regular, I don't know, in regular intervals, have some sort of judicial oversight, secret judicial oversight, to make sure there are guys that we know have committed acts against us, so that you're right. The signature attacks are indefensible, as far as I'm concerned.
And President Obama did not.
Attacks on family members of bad people are indefensible, but I told you where I would have an argument potentially with someone like Glenn Greenwald or other people is, to me, if it's someone like Al Awlaki, who is actively planning against the United States and is
okay.
actively, in my opinion, committing treason, I don't think that I don't think that's nearly as black and white. Just because you start off an American citizen, if you're planning to hurt American citizens, your American citizenship doesn't tell me very much anymore.
Okay, all right. Well, let's get to Awlaki in a second, because I want to make one thing clear, that President Obama in no way said that he was going to stop the policy of signature strikes.
No, I agree with you, and that's what I'm saying.
There are some people,
and I think that's terrible.
And there are some people who are writing, and particularly McClatchy weighed in on this, because McClatchy also did the reporting some time ago that we were not only using signature strikes for people that fit a profile of people we think might be people who might be up to stuff that would harm our national security. We also used drones as a mechanism, as basically as a commodity, to other governments to say, hey, we'll take out these guys that you don't like if you give us permission to do X, Y, or Z. And there was nothing in his speech. And in fact, McClatchy.
That's obviously terrible, too.
McClatchy analysis.
So I can be clear
that
I have
now,
serious problems with
in
all
terms
that.
Of Awlaki, the problem that I understand it in terms of what Holder laid out in his letter and in what the president said was that all that evidence that we were given about what Awlaki did, and he very well may have done those things, actually on a timeline took place, even if we stipulate that he did those things, following the first attempt to kill Awlaki. So there's still a lot that we don't know about that case. But even if you stipulate in that instance that all those things were true, that we could not in any way, and according to Jeremy Scahill's reporting, there was certainly offers from the Alaki tribe in Yemen that
Whole tribe named after him?
Yes. Well, that's the way it works. You know,
it's sort of like sometimes when you go and you hang out with the Cedar tribe in upstate New York.
Indeed.
Right?
Indeed. Yep. And so,
So
I think there's a lot of questions about Alaki that were not addressed in that.
And there are, again, that's why I find so tough when people are very black and white about it, because I think I think there probably are questions there. I guess I'm just making the case that in certain cases, I think that there is a case, as we've done in the past, with pre-drones, whether it was cruise missiles or whatever, or bombers for that matter, where if there's somebody who is trying to commit or planning to commit terrorist acts against the United States, there should be judicial review of some sort, there should be, you know, and the rest, but I do think there is a case to be made that there are people that need to be taken out. With that said, that doesn't mean that the signature strikes on family members, strikes when we don't have the kind of evidence together, and most other vestiges of our now insanely bloated and ridiculous homeland security apparatus need to be pulled back. And I think repealing the AUMF is one way, is a start.
Right.
But closing Gitmo and a variety of other things we need to do. And yes, we need a policy, and what Obama is saying right now is not nearly enough, that lays out, you know, when it is that we're going to use drones in very specific circumstances with very specific people who are planning acts against the United States.
Okay, so I want to move from drones in just a second, but I think, you know, the last thing is that there has not been a sufficient explanation about Alaki's son, and about in particular, because I think the point is,
as far as I know, was not involved in terrorism, and maybe I'm wrong about that. There's no explanation I've seen that would justify
just that he was not specifically targeted, and and so the implications, it could have been a mistake. I think there is some reporting that suggests that there was, you know, sort of not necessarily rogue elements that were involved in this. But, you know, we've heard, yes, that what's-his-face, who was formerly in the administration, Gibbs, said that his dad was irresponsible. Harry Reid said that these people were up to no good.
What are we going to do? I mean, when you go up to your family members, what are we going to do next? Are we going to drone, you know, Liz Cheney because of her dad? Okay, bad example.
Right. You're right. And look, the fact of the matter is that if there is these rogue elements that are doing this, even to give them the benefit of the doubt that Obama heard this, he was genuinely pissed, as been reported. He's like, this is out of control. Then that is an argument for even more restriction and more transparency on this process. So,
yes.
So let's leave it there and go to Guantanamo, because people have also pointed out that now, there's a lot of back and forth. Was it how much is Congress constraining President Obama's ability to close Guantanamo? And to a certain extent, very much so. But on another extent, not so much. And
that's the question: is what can he do with Guantanamo unilaterally?
I will tell you.
That's why I come on this show, to learn from you.
Wait, is that rhetorical or not?
It's not. I mean, I know there is a certain amount he can do, but again, I don't know exactly what he can do. So you're going to teach me.
He said
right now
exactly what he can do. He said exactly what he can do in that speech, and he said that he was going to lift the ban on returning Yemenites to Yemen.
Oh yeah, well,
and that's you're
that,
talking
right.
about 50 people there, which is about one third of the people who are in Guantanamo. He himself said
the ban on returning Yemenites to Yemen, he can probably lift some bans and returning other people to their countries too.
The point is he announced that he was shifting his policy. So,
you know, that's a great point. I read this and I didn't even think about that. If he can do that, he can do it with a variety of people.
No. The point is, if he could do that, he could have done that 2 years ago.
Right. Well,
that's the point.
We
know by the president's own admission exactly what he could do. Would that close Guantanamo? No. But would that deal with one third of the prisoners there? Yes.
And again, there must be people from other countries outside of Yemen where I'm sure we could do that too. They would deal with more of the prisoners. The question becomes, the only place where it becomes more difficult, particularly with Republican obstreperousness and being the way that they are, their nihilism, is the people that legitimately need to be tried because we do think they did something, and how that process would take place.
Well,
but you're right. A lot of Gitmo, and I read that, and I didn't even think about that. So I'm glad that I'm on with you, and you're smarter than I am, which is...
Well, I just read it somewhere myself.
You're right. If he can do that with Yemen, why the hell can't he do that with frankly, that would close down one third of it. But again, my guess is he goes down. I mean, remember that there were the Chinese Muslims that were there. I'm sure there were plenty of people from other countries that could just be sent back.
The other problem is that, according to the administration and his own speech, was that he said something to the effect, even after we take these steps, where he talks about the steps that he can take unilaterally, he says how to deal with those Gitmo detainees who we know have participated in dangerous plots or attacks but cannot be prosecuted, for example, because the evidence against them has been compromised or is inadmissible in a court of law. In other words, the Bush administration tortured these people and got this information through torture or tainted
generally,
the...
Generally, we still determine this country that's not admissible in a court of law.
And good for us. But he says,
right.
Once we commit...
I think that's still our rule anyhow. It may have changed.
And he goes on to say, but once we commit to a process of closing Gitmo, I'm confident that this legacy problem can be resolved consistent with our commitment to the rule of law. The problem is that he's sort of acknowledging we may have 50 people. Or whatever that number is.
Well, there's 166 there overall.
Right.
Right?
And we know that about
a third are from Yemen. And now, so take them out.
And we know the other half.
There's a few of them that may be guilty. And so we think they're guilty. Then you're looking at, as I said, and I'm rereading this now, so I don't sound like an imbecile, that exactly what I said that I thought he would do, he is saying he'll do, which is sending a senior envoy to other nations to talk about that, talk to them about taking back. So once you take back those guys, you're not talking about a huge number of people here. The problem is, as you pointed out, is what can be admissible in a court of law, and if we've now screwed ourselves to the point where people that actually are guilty of things can just go free.
And so we just don't know what's going to happen with that. With all that said, I give him a mixed grade on this because he's admitted to all of us that he had the ability to, at the very least, make Guantanamo one third smaller than it is now. But he is at least articulating a notion and putting some pressure on Congress to close this thing down. All right, let's move to.
I will still say, to me, the biggest failure in all of this. Obviously, you've got the Hughes and the Addingtons and guys like that, but the biggest failure in all this is as soon as he came into office, he should have prosecuted Dick Cheney.
Of course.
To me, that would answer all of these questions.
Absolutely.
I mean, that would have been the debate, and some people would say George Bush, and yes, I think that things go right to the top in terms of who's held responsible, but I do think in a lot of cases, a lot of these policies were drummed up by Cheney. I don't even know exactly what Bush knew, and Cheney's frankly numerous times admitted to this and defended this stuff. I think at the very least, the very least, there's no argument that I can think of against not having prosecuted.
And Asa Hutchinson, of all people, who sat on that commission that filed its report, I guess about a month ago, agrees with you. That there was unequivocally, we had a systemic policy of torture, that it emanated from the very highest levels of the U.S. government. And you're right, that was sort of the original sin, and that's why all of this is problematic now, because you have to relitigate that what we've done has sort of poisoned the well in many respects. And,
that's exactly right.
And so that's the situation that President Obama sees himself in. Now, the other thing he addressed was he paid some lip service, and I call it lip service because I don't really see, I really didn't see enough in that speech, in terms of what I find the most problematic of the weeks, the past couple of weeks worth of scandals, which was the AP subpoena and the Fox News reporter warrant. And he's basically said, I'm charging Attorney General Holder with the responsibility of going back and making sure that what was done was appropriate. Now, we know Holder signed off on the warrant, which said that this reporter, in the course of reporting only, broke or aided and abetted or functioned as a co-conspirator to a leaker. So, you know, to put him in charge of investigating himself seems to me to be weak tea, as it were. And also, you know, what he could have said is, you know, the guidelines that we said when we quashed the first media shield law are not sufficient. We need to review those guidelines. He didn't get that specific. He said we offer up the media shield law, but we don't know what version they're offering up, because we do know that they essentially emasculated is the wrong word I'm looking for. Eviscerate is maybe too strong. They really wanted it watered down when it was offered by Spector and Schumer in 2009.
Right.
And so
that's about right.
And so I don't think that the president went far enough in that accord. And it's just sort of interesting to me because...
Well, I would say quickly, I don't think, you know, and as I said earlier, I don't think he went far enough in a number of ways, because right. I think he, yeah, I mean, what he mentioned about Gitmo, if he's actually going to do that, that's great, although he's admitting, as you said, that he didn't do it when he could have, which is like forever ago. But in addition to that, you know, where are some of these other things we're talking about? Where are some of these other civil liberties violations that we're talking? I mean, I think I would have liked to have heard specific ways he will roll back policies that are indefensible that have been in place. And I mean, again, culturally, I like the speech overall. I like that it's at least willing to stand up and ask questions, but we needed more.
Right. I think, you know, time will tell to a certain extent. And it's just sort of, I'm still sort of just fascinated with the notion of, you know, why now? Where is this pressure? Obviously, he's feeling some type of pressure, and it's interesting because, you know,
my guess, Sam, is like so many other things, see, Social Security, guns, immigration, this is legacy stuff, and he was going to do this second term.
Yeah.
And he was going to make this a push because he doesn't want to be remembered for some of the garbage he did the first term on civil liberties. But in the end, I think his agenda was pushed, you know, to a much sort of sooner, and the window kind of moved up because of some of the stuff that's been going on lately.
Well, you've got a huge hunger strike that has been going on for months now. 100 plus prisoners in Guantanamo. I think about now we're up to almost 30 that have to be force fed, strapped down with a tube shoved up their nose on a daily basis.
You've got that going on. You've had increasing questions about drones as Americans have been killed, and that information had to be released that Americans were killed. You know, when you think of all that and you think of maybe even Rand Paul's speech, you know, a little while, there's a lot going on around these issues. And again, just frankly, the trouble he's gotten into over the AP and Fox. And I just think when you put all that together, he needed to change the storyline. He needed to change the narrative, as we say, in the biz. And I think this, for him, effectively did that, because people are talking about different things right now than they were talking about yesterday.
Yeah, it was just sort of the fascinating, and I'm interested to see the reporting that comes out of this, and of course, we'll, you know, to see what implications this has, and both in terms of like what actual changes happen, what legislative changes happen, and how this plays out politically, because on some level, it's also sort of a recognition or a manifestation that the Obama administration, at the very least, feels like they are now on some measure of terra firma, that in terms of their national security bona fides, that at the least they can be rhetorically, they're willing to put themselves out there rhetorically and say, we've got to end this war on terror. Because, you know, like on cue, you got a bunch of Republican morons going like, I'm afraid now. What's going to happen? We're going to be attacked from all places. I don't know who it was.
There are only so many corners of my bed I can hide under. I've peed three of the four of them already.
Exactly.
That kind of thing.
Well, yeah. Cliff, there was other topics that we wanted to get to, but these were substantially.
No, this is important stuff,
yes,
obviously, because this kind of defines the kind of country we're going to be. So if we missed out on a few other topics, we'll get to them.
There's always next week. I want you to have a happy Memorial Day, Cliff, and great weekend.
You too, buddy. Have a great time.
Thanks so
Enjoy
much.
Enjoy the family.
Always
get
a pleasure.
Sleep. if possible.
All right, Cliff. Thanks very much.
Take care, man.
All right, folks. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking to Todd Barry. And there are some members of our audience that are so excited about Todd Barry coming onto the show in a way that I have seen very few of our film guests, of course, except for our regulars, Isabel and Matthew. A level of enthusiasm that I think is unparalleled with our sort of drop-ins. So we'll be back in just a moment with Todd Barry. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is a. Let me just read to you what our regular listener and sometimes caller inner, and I am her, Jay from Connecticut, had to say that he was so excited when he heard that Todd Barry was going to be on. Apparently, Todd, were you just in Stamford, Connecticut?
Yeah, for Louis.
Wait, what are you doing now? You sounded great. Now you don't sound so good.
I don't know. Hold on a second.
Are you at a cafe?
I'm using my microphone. Is that screwing things up?
I don't know. Were you using your microphone when I just spoke to you off air?
Yes, you were. This is a disaster.
Wait, you were using the microphone?
Yeah.
All right, now you sound fine.
It does? All right.
So,
I was at Stanford. I did a show with Louis C.K.
Who?
I know. I shouldn't say that I opened for anyone at this level of my career.
But apparently you slew, according to this guy.
Did he say I slew?
Yeah.
I slayed?
No, he said you slew.
I stormed it. That's for your UK listeners. I stormed it.
So Todd Barry, folks, toddbarry.com.
Thank you.
Is it fun opening for Louis?
Yeah, you know. He travels by pretty private jet, usually, believe it or not.
Yes, I do believe it.
I don't know if he took one to Stamford, though. We may have driven there.
That would have been awkward to take a private jet to Stamford. I think you...
That's even more reason to do it, though, don't you think?
Yes. I mean, at that point, you got to use a helicopter. Am I not right?
I've done that with him as well.
Have you really been in a helicopter with him to a gig?
Yeah. Yeah. I forgot where it was. Somewhere in, like, New Jersey or upstate New York or something. It was my first helicopter ride. It was quite enjoyable.
Wow. I mean, Louis really seems to have a thing for helicopters because he always sort of puts them in his show whenever he can.
He does use them, yeah. He loves them. He loves helicopters.
I mean, is it weird for you to like, you know, Louis, like, I mean, you're obviously incredibly successful yourself.
I know, you found that one dude in Connecticut.
There was at least one guy in Connecticut who loves you. But is it weird? I mean, is it? I mean, I saw Louis for the first time in a while, hung out with him, and literally watch him make, as we were just hanging out and he was texting, watch him make, a ton of money. Just by, you know, like, oh, I got this gig, boom. And is it weird, though?
He's very nice. He would never text in front of me. Unless there was a lot of money to be made.
You don't want to go into this. Is that it, Todd?
What is it? Weird that he's gotten successful?
That successful.
Yeah, it's kind of but a lot of my friends way back have gotten really big while I have gotten just big.
Right. I mean, I know that feeling, frankly. I mean, we have similar friends.
Of course, I'm significantly younger than you, and so I still have.
Hey, you must. I'm saying I'm going to guess 4 months younger than me.
I think probably 7 to 8 months younger than you. So I still have those 7 or 8 months to.
You still have the eye of the tiger, the fire.
That's right. Now you don't want to weigh in on the Michael Ian Black. There was a big Twitter dust up. You don't want to weigh in on that, do you?
I think salon.com already, believe it or not. That some, I'm getting feedback here.
Yeah,
are you there?
I don't know why.
I think I tried to get too fancy about using this mic. You should just use the internal mic on my computer, right?
I don't know.
It sounds good now. Let's not keep. I won't point it out anymore.
What is all that other noise that we're getting in there? It's like some type of other. I don't know. It's strange.
I should have just called you from a real phone.
Yeah, why didn't you do that? Do you have a real phone?
I do. You want me to call back?
No, why don't you do this? Why don't you just IM me on the Twitter there as to what your real phone is? I asked you for a real phone. Wait, you didn't want to pay this?
No, but you know, I don't know my own phone number. Hold on a sec.
Unbelievable, ladies and
gentlemen. This is like the least smooth. This, even for an internet show, this is not smooth.
No, this is, in fact, this is actually... We're still in Washington D.C. time, ladies and gentlemen.
You could have gotten to one more topic with Cliff had you known this was going to be such a disaster.
Wow, I love the fact that that you're listening to the show.
I do listen anytime I do a show. I try to listen to the first, you know, like 3 minutes before.
To see if they're knocking you before you come in.
Just to get an overall vibe and see. Like, heard you guys talking about a lot of things that I couldn't possibly weigh in on.
Well, there's some of it. Did you see the speech?
I saw some of it, yeah.
All right, let me. I'm gonna email you the number to call. Okay.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Yeah.
Do it.
And just call me, and then we'll get this thing.
Although
going.
It does sound fine now, doesn't it?
Yeah. No, oh. You're sort of like weirdly coming in and out occasionally. So I've just emailed it to you. Call that number, and we'll talk to you in a second.
All right, I'll call.
Okay. All right, hold on for 1 second. For now, let's just keep his mic up. He's got a button. Keep this up. Say it again.
I said he really does not want to talk about the Marin dust up, apparently.
No.
That was what the mic went out.
Todd doesn't like to... Ugh. Now, Mike, it must be my internet, because now it's taking me forever to send this email to him. There we go. Unbelievable. Yeah, no, Todd is... He doesn't like to... He, you know, Todd and I are very similar in that way.
Really?
Well, maybe not exactly. Maybe I do like to talk about that. But, I mean, he doesn't, you know, he's not forthcoming, Todd Barry. He plays it close to the vest. Oh, there he is. Hopefully he has not been listening. Todd, I was just saying
sorry.
That you and I are similar in some ways. And that we both play things, we both play things close to the vest.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you don't like to weigh in on this. Now, I do like to weigh in on, like, the Michael Ian Black Marin thing. But you don't like to. Why? You don't even have to tell me why. But why don't you?
What would I benefit from weighing in on something?
That's the thing.
How can I benefit by taking sides? I'm going to call that one a tie.
A tie, right? Okay.
Yeah.
A tie for first or a tie for last?
Well, that all depends on what you think of it.
See, you're cagey. You're like, it's like Todd Barry. You're like a UN diplomat in a way.
I am. I might actually be one. From, I've never told you
from a country that is like in between two. You always like get the sense like you're in between two superpowers. You don't want to offend either one.
I know. Those if when I think of Michael Ian Black and Mark Maron, I think superpowers. See, now they're going to both be mad at me because I said that.
See, that? You can't even say you can't even say that without a fear.
I know, it was a joke.
Yeah, I know it was a joke, and don't worry, they don't listen to this.
I mean, do I really want it? Would you really want it? Do you get into Twitter feuds with people? I mean, what do you?
Oh, with Marin all the time.
Well, Marin, yeah, and you like to rattle him a little bit, right?
Yeah, that's what I. And
do you bully him?
Do I bully him? I try.
I mean, do you say things like knowing he's going to get upset?
Oh, well, I used to, but now it's not as Now he's just sort of too well adjusted, and you know, now I think like when I do that, he just sort of looks like, eh, whatever. It's just Cedar. But there was a time, sure, yeah, I would do that.
So you were a bully.
Yeah. Yeah, I would bully him. I mean, but he also, it was really in response to his bullying too, because his bullying is much more sort of like passive aggressive bullying in some respects. He always sort of bullies.
Right, you're full on.
Yeah, he always just like bullies from like a position of supposed victimization. But he bullies too, don't you think? I mean, come on.
Why are we talking about Marin?
I don't know. Just because.
If you had Marin on, would you guys be talking about me and how I don't get into Twitter feuds?
That's actually one of the topics I put on my list to talk to Marin about.
Does Marin call into your show?
No.
Thanks for serving up the Google Voice number. That was nice of you.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, keep that close to the vest, as I know you will. So what else is going on, though? I mean,
I've got my own podcast now.
Really?
Podcast. Yeah.
Do tell.
I interviewed, you didn't know that?
Well, I mean, I hear rumors, but.
Yeah, I interviewed, my latest episode has maybe someone you know. Do you know Ari Melber?
Yes, you interviewed Ari
Melber?
You
guys don't get along? You guys don't get along?
No, I don't necessarily don't get along with him. I mean, I know him. I'm not particularly friends with him.
Now we have some juicy gossip.
Really? You interviewed Ari Melber?
Yeah.
What?
Is that weird? I know. It was mainly comedians, but then I know him a little bit, and he was up for it, and I didn't want to ask you, so it worked out.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. And what did you talk to Ari Melber about?
Everything, but I kind of just, what I try to do when I talk to people for my podcast, I've only done it a handful of times,
yeah,
is I kind of just say one thing, hope they talk for a while, then I say another thing, and then the hour's up. So I say two things.
Two things.
You're going to have to listen is what I'm saying.
I understand. All right, well, now, how do you know Ari Melber?
Wow, this is under your skin, isn't it? I could tell.
No, I'm just asking. I
can feel through.
It's weird
that
you would interview Ari Melber before you would interview me, I think, on that show, but that's all right.
I know. I have known you longer. Maybe I will have you as a guest.
Well, but how do you know Ari Melber? I mean, because you don't necessarily.
I met him randomly at a party.
Really? Now, I have to say this about Todd is you're at almost every single party.
Oh, no. I bet if you counted up all the parties and then found out which ones I was at, you'd find out that I was at very few of the parties, statistically.
Statistically speaking.
Yeah, I bet I'm at 1%. I bet I'm at 12% of the parties.
Now, I'm just trying to figure out, like, and I am a little bit fixated on this. You and Ari Melber at a party. Did you approach
him?
Yeah.
I was at this party. It was this Portlandia party, which, were you invited to that?
No.
Ooh,
I have not been to any party in ages, and certainly not entertainment parties.
Well, that makes sense. No, that you didn't deserve that. Why don't you get invited to parties?
Because, you know, I think I don't go that much, and I'm just not out that much anymore. You know, I'm out of the scene, man.
I would think you'd get invited to, like, I don't know. Democracy Now parties or something?
The last party I went to, to be honest with you, the last party I went to was a party for Jeremy Scahill. And I spoke to Amy Goodman there, and I saw the guys from Citizen Radio and Scahill, and yes.
Oh, so, I saw that guy. Yeah, I saw that guy on TV last night, Scahill.
Yeah. Wait, so you're telling me the story. So you're invited, you're at the Portlandia party. I'm not surprised that Melber is there. Melber is like one of those, he's very social. That I know about him. And so who approached who?
Well, I went up to him, I think.
Really?
Yeah, I think I went up to him. And I said, I think I just said, hi. I go, yeah, you're from MSNBC. And then I talked about how once Alex Wagner made fun of his sweater.
Oh, now I see what's going on. You wanted to see if you could get an in with Alex Wagner.
No.
Yes, no. That's it, definitely. Okay.
Mm-mm. Not at all.
Come on, tell us. What happened?
I was just talking to people. You know, I'm starstruck. I like to know people from different walks of life.
Yeah. And
yeah.
And so and you guys, so then do you go out? Do you go out with Ari Melber? Like, do you guys meet? Because you're famous.
I like went to like a party. I mean, if it makes you feel better, I probably hung out with you way more than I've hung out with Ari Melber.
No.
And I know that does make you feel better.
That does make me feel better. I'm just curious because you guys are sort of like an odd couple in a way. I mean,
well, we're not a couple, so that rules that out.
Well, do you go out, like, because Todd, I should tell people, is sort of famous for, like, do you still go out? Like, I mean, I think most of the times we hung out was, like, at 12:30 in the morning at, like, the Veselka or something, right?
Well, that's a crazy lifestyle. You were at a diner with me.
No, but I'm saying, like, do you do that with Ari Melber or no?
I mean, I think I've only hung out with him a couple of times where it's just like he has a birthday party or something and it's like, go to this bar.
Okay. So
yeah,
you got
only
the,
a couple of times.
You're actually bringing
I like
a certain...
both you guys. I like both you guys.
No, I know. I'm not getting jealous. I'm just saying, I'm just trying to find out the dynamic. So you bring a certain
sort of
like...
If they had a
like...
fifth person on the cycle, I hope it's you.
They can't. That's the thing, is they have to jump right
to six.
If they need
to make it 99% liberal on that panel, I'd say they should bring you.
I don't think that they can't add a fifth person, right? Because that would be like the Fox show. So they'd have to jump to six. It would have to be like.
Well,
six.
I think you should be on there twice. Somehow be counted as two people.
All right, I like it.
I just want you to win this because I see it's upsetting you.
What? No. I'm just curious. I mean, it would be like if you said to me, like, yeah, I'm hanging out with, I don't know, like a, you know, like a, somebody played for the Yankees or something. I mean, I just, you know, that's, I think it's a, would come as a surprise to a lot of people that you're hanging out with Ari Melber.
Well, that's why he's a good guest on my podcast, because it's not expected. It's not like, oh, he's interviewing another comedian, which is the other, every other episode of the show.
And so what else do you do on the podcast? You just basically two questions and then they go?
I just talk. I try to make it a conversation as opposed to an interview, because I don't know how to interview. Right. I don't really know how to have a conversation either, but...
But that's the beauty of podcasts, right? I mean, I think that's what people tune in for.
I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing.
Why are you doing it?
Because I think you're supposed to, right?
All right, that sounds really inspired. I think you should do, frankly, I think you should do not comedians. I think you should do, like, I honestly think you should go down this road to just other people who are on TV.
How do I find them, though?
I mean,
I'm famous,
all,
but I'm not that famous.
I would say Melber. I would start with Melber.
Melber, yeah.
And then,
should I bring them back?
You're peeps. You can get to these other people.
Yeah. Who should be my next guest?
I think just like somebody like random off of daytime television. I think it would be pretty funny.
Like a soap star?
Yeah. I don't know why I'm programming your podcast now.
You're doing a good job.
Thanks.
I thought I was, you're doing a good job. Maybe I'll have you on sometime.
Well, that's...
Or maybe I'll just... If you can just send me an MP3 of this audio. I'll just put it out.
And...
Hoping no one cross-referenced it.
Now, so what did you decide? You decide, like, I got to do a podcast now because that's what you got to do as a comedian, or what?
Well, you know, a couple of people would be like, hey, Todd, you should have a podcast. I mean, literally two people said that to me.
Ari Melber.
And then... Then you kind of go, hey, I can put out a podcast, and I could probably get people to listen to it. So let's see what happens if I do that.
Has the response been good?
So I did it. I had Janine on.
Oh, yeah, Janine on. That's good.
Yeah.
Was it
fun? Are you all right with that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm all right with anybody. But, you know, you tell me you had comedians on, I'm not surprised. You tell me you had Ari Melber
on. That was a left fielder.
Right. I mean, it was a bit of a... Nice.
It was a curveball.
Nice punt. Nice pun, too.
I know. I was going to point out the pun, but then I backed off.
You should bring Greg Gutfield on to balance it out. Don't you know that dude? You must know that guy, right?
I don't know, Greg. He's the guy from...
The
what
Five.
Is it, Red Eye?
He's now on The Five, which is what the cycle was based on.
Really?
Yeah. What, are you doing something else right now, or did I just blow you away? The cycle
no,
isn't
based on... I mean, what sense is it based on? It's a panel show.
Fox had a five-person panel show that they called The Five that was on earlier than most shows. And it's different in that it basically has five hosts. That's not a typical panel show. And they have five hosts, and none of them seem to be the host. They take turns bringing up stories. And so then MSNBC said, we've got to have our own. We can't call it The Four, so let's call it The Cycle.
That makes sense.
I just blew you away with that, didn't I?
I got to say, they're starting to drill on my roof. We might hear that in a second.
That's all right. That's we like that.
It's gritty, right? It adds a little grit.
Now, are you still in your same apartment?
Probably not the one that you're referring to.
Are you in that same building or no?
No, I didn't move within the building. I actually moved out to a whole new building when
really?
I moved.
And are you still?
Yeah.
Where are you living? Just
although you moved when you moved. In New York, you move like within three. You move from one apartment in an area no one lives to another apartment in the same area where no one lives.
That's right. For a long time, I went from like 29th and Lex to like 30th and Madison to like 31st and 3rd. It just moved within like a 100 yard radius because at the time I knew where everything was. And so that
I, on the other hand, moved four blocks from my old place.
Oh, did you? Okay, so you're still down like in the East Village. Is that
sure? Why don't you just? Do you want me to give my address out?
The East Village is a pretty big place. It's a. Do you record your podcast at your apartment or what?
I do. I do with a microphone that I probably not the best. It's the one I used earlier where I had to call you back.
But you do it in person, right?
I do it in person. Should I do phoners? Maybe
no,
that's the
I think in person is actually in some ways better because it makes it more it makes it more personal, and I think people like that on podcasts. I like to keep everything at an emotional arm's length, which I know you do too, so maybe a phone is better.
We're close to the best guys. Maybe just like letters.
Yeah. That actually could be pretty interesting.
Where are you doing your show from, by the way? I can't say I follow your show.
I do the show from just in the shadow of the New York Times building in, in the Dollar Lunch district of New York City.
Dollar Lunch.
Yeah, the fashion. It's also the fashion district too, because I, when we're done with the show, I go and I'm trying to branch out and find other revenue sources. So I'm actually doing some low cost, prêt-à-porter type of stuff, for men and women.
Sam haggles with Bangladeshi ladies about threads.
Yes.
I'm not sure I followed any of that.
All right. Well, fair enough.
I shut you down. I apologize.
That's all right.
I'm being playful, man. You're being playful. We're being playful.
No, I know. This is fun. I'm not in any way offended.
Think the dude in Connecticut is still listening?
No. I think just about everybody's gone at this point.
He's calling him back. I'm not. You lost me.
All right. Let's talk movies. Oh, the only other thing I want to ask you is, are you still in touch with
Ari
the guy?
Melber, yes.
Are you still in touch with the with the guys from... What was that band I used to love? They were from Florida. Do you remember what they are? Do you remember?
Oh God, no. Anyway, what's your next question?
Why did you respond that way?
Because I don't want to talk about my past, man.
Well, all right, let's talk about the future. What do you got lined up?
I have a podcast out. That's what I'm going to talk about. No, I'm done with that. I'm done talking about
the Silos.
The Silos. What about them?
Well, for a long time, they were my favorite band, and I told you.
I don't know what happened. I think they might be still around in some incarnation.
Wow. I mean, this was a long time ago for me, though. But you really perked right back up there. I don't know why you got so defensive about that other thing.
I'm a real volatile guy, man.
Let's talk movies. Todd, as you know, I don't go out to parties. So I don't get to meet people like yourself or Ari Melber. And
have you guys never met?
No, I've known Ari for a long time.
Oh, I'm gonna ask him what he. I'll email him and go. Brought your name up, and it was a little weird. And then I'll see what.
Yeah, do that. Let's see, and then we'll have you back on. You can read the email. This could also be the next podcast you do. That's
do you guys. Are you mad because people probably confuse you two guys?
No. People don't confuse Ari, Melbourne, and I do get this all the time. I mean. Relative to the extent that anybody recognizes me ever. But, like, even in my building, saw a guy at the laundry, and he's like, who had just moved into the building, he's like, I've seen you. He's British. I've seen you on television. Yes, occasionally. And he goes, on MSNBC. And I'm like, right. And he goes, you're Sam Stein. That's what I get all the time. People think I'm Sam Stein. And, I don't necessarily look like him, but I think it's just Sam Jewish MSNBC.
Yeah, that's close enough for me.
I've never gotten Ari Melber. And, you know, frankly, I mean, he's a very, I think he's in many respects a much better looking guy, a much younger looking guy than myself. So it would certainly be a compliment, I think, at that point.
Well, had I known you were going to take it that way, I wouldn't have said it.
Yeah, all right. So Todd, what should I, first off, two things. Send him that email, because I think that would be great stuff for your podcast and mine. And but also, as you know, Todd, I now have a second child. Are you aware of that?
A second child?
Did you not know that?
No, I didn't. Congratulations. What's your second child's name?
Saul.
Saul?
Yeah.
Is he Jewish?
He is partially. Partially
S-O-L?
Jewish.
S-O-L?
No, S-A-U-L.
Sure. Oh, Saul, like Saul Bellow.
Yes.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I
congratulations.
Went thank you.
How old is Saul?
He is now 11 weeks old as of yesterday.
Seriously? Oh, my God.
Yeah, dude.
Congratulations.
Thanks. I didn't know about your podcast. You didn't know about my son.
My gift to you and your son is this interview.
Yes, he's saying thank you already. Now, as such, I don't get out very often, like I said, and so I need a suggestion as to what I can watch on Netflix or Amazon.
Now, I was going to recommend like something I just saw, which I rewatched, but you probably have seen it. But did you see Sexy Beast?
You know, I did, but it was a long time ago. Why should I rewatch it?
Because it's such a great movie. You should rewatch it.
You could be a film reviewer with that.
I know. I'm the worst because I'll watch a movie, think it's great, and then people go, what was it about? I go, I don't remember what it was about. But it was the best movie I've ever seen.
What can you tell us about it?
I couldn't tell you one thing about it. About Sexy Beast?
Yes.
Well, it has, the plot is very much like, it's a very sort of common heist criminal coming back from retirement to do one more heist plot, which sounds like it's been done before, but it's just done in a different way. And also, it's just, and Ben Kingsley's in it. He's amazing. There's other guys in it who I should have looked up who are also amazing, and everyone in it's great. It looks cool, and it's only 88 minutes.
I love how you memorized the one thing you can remember from it. It's 88 minutes.
Oh, yeah, that's...
You can't afford to be taught to be tied down like that, right?
Yeah, I'm just thinking of too many, you know, I'm thinking of my next podcast guest. I can't be watching movies all day.
All right, well, so Sexy Beast it is.
Yeah, what? Sexy Beast.
What? What were you going to say?
No, I don't know. No. Did you? So you saw it a long time ago?
I did, but, you know, I don't remember anything anymore. I don't remember anything. My head's just too full of other stuff.
Well, you got Saul there to think about.
Yeah, it's true.
But I recommend Sexy Beast. There's a show called House of Cards I bet you've never heard of.
Yes, I've never heard of that.
Did you watch that?
Yeah, I did. Did you like it?
I liked it a lot. Did
really?
You like it?
I liked it to a certain extent. I mean, I never thought it was great. And then I thought it was okay. And then I got really annoyed when... spoiler alert.
You're going to spoiler it for some people.
I mean, people should have watched it by now. But at one point, let me put it this way.
I'm not going to spoil it, but the lead does something that, you know, I think sort of, in my mind,
I agree with you,
was the equivalent of basically saying, like, oh, he has superpowers, which is not in any way what it is, so I'm not spoiling anything. But it just sort of took it out of the realm of what was interesting to me. And
yeah, you know, there was one thing that I did, that he did, that I think, oh, he's too smart to have done that.
Yeah, too smart.
We might be talking about the same thing.
Yeah,
but
I think so. And but not just too smart, but also, and then there was a couple of, like, Deus Ex Machina things that happened towards the end. I just felt like the last three or four episodes were just sort of lazy. And
really?
I didn't appreciate that.
Wow. I mean, overall, I thought it was really good. But, I mean, everything's flawed. Even my podcast is flawed sometimes.
Well, folks, with that caveat, I will say, tune into Todd Barry's podcast. Where can people find it? Todd Barry.
On iTunes, or you can go to Feral Audio, feralaudio.com.
Because you're so wild.
I am. I'm like one of Mark Maron's cats.
There you go. I see you had to bring it all the way back to Maron. Ladies and gentlemen, Todd. What?
No, I was going to say, I think I did a good job. I was worried about not being good on your show. I think I was excellent on your show.
No, I would give you like an 8.7.
Sounds good.
All right. Todd Barry, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks, Todd.
All right, man. Bye. Sure. Right. See you later. Thanks.
Well, it was, you know, it's tough to get anything out of that guy. He plays it so close to the vest.
Pretty funny, though. I hate House of Cards.
I know you
I think it's just such a utterly pretentious, poorly written, totally unrepresentative of Washington, and in a weird way, falsely reassuring show. I think it's terrible.
All right.
I'll get off my soapbox. Sorry about
Get off your soapbox.
I'm right, though.
I mean, I didn't think it was terrible. I thought it was, you know, it was fairly entertaining. It was at least ambitious. Let's put it that way. And so I give some props for that. Matt, do you want to weigh in? Didn't watch it. All right. Let's play the Jimmy Reefer Cake song of the week.
Yeah, Benghazi. Yeah. This Cliff Schechter wrote the real McCain. Cliff Schechter. Libertas LLC. New media. Public relations, my friends. Strategy. You want any of these services? You know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. This is Jimmy Reefer Cake. If anyone can do a better John McCain impression, and I'm sure you can, here are the chords. I'm going to tweet this out at Jimmy Reefer Cake, and you can record over with your voice.
I'll tell you what. We will post it on the site. Okay. Wow, this was obviously a...
Jimmy's version was good.
Yeah, I don't even know what to make of it, but I like the idea. And so, folks, Jimmy's chords will be up on majority.fm. I want to say that was uninspired, but in some ways it was inspired. But, you know, we're getting a little far afield from tweet to sing the week's news. That seemed more like it was interesting. All right, let's take a, well, no, let's just go right into, some IMs, and maybe we'll take some phone calls. We went long today, but that's all right. Now, folks, just some, housekeeping, as it were. We're not going to be around Monday. We're all taking off. I want you all to have a great Memorial Day. Matt is taking a well-deserved break. Michael is taking now what really amounts to an excessive break.
Meditating really, is not a break, my friend.
Before the meditating.
What?
Yeah, it was a little bit excessive.
Before the meditating?
Let's...
What are you guys thinking about?
Well, we're thinking about, like, when we said, like, should we do a show that day? And you're like, oh, yeah, we should definitely take off. And then, like,
when you return, like, oh, remember, I'm taking next week off.
No, it was that same week.
Oh, yeah.
Michael asked for a day off because he was tired.
Whoa. This is how things get messed
up. And then he came into work for 2 days, and then he went off on his retreat.
See, you guys had me good, and then you have to insert the lie, and then your credibility is shot. So forget it.
I don't see the lie.
The lie was that the day off was my idea. You proposed
no,
it.
No, okay, sure, not a problem. No.
You, and then Michael I went back. Totally...
The proper response.
I didn't say we should take Monday off. Oh, and by the way, I'm leaving on Thursday.
Michael,
that's not what happened.
Michael and I had that pilot episode of the Matt and Michael show. And Michael was like, you know, we should really play that soon. How about Monday? And then Michael comes back on Tuesday after we took off that Monday and goes, oh, by the way, my retreat begins Thursday.
As you've known for a year because it was written to my contract. This wasn't exactly a surprise.
That's what I'm always doing. I'm constantly reviewing your contract.
I don't even have a contract. Please, what are you talking about?
That was it. Unbelievable.
All right, fine. I'm just Machiavellian with those off. Well, I'll go with that. That's fine.
Now, Michael will be here in the office holding down the fort just in the event that we get any mail.
If that helps you to think that, you can go with that.
We will be off on Monday, and soon you guys are going to be starting to do Matt and Mike Monday for, over the course of the summer. Coming up in June, I will be going to Netroots Nation. So all sorts of things in the future. Let's go now to the IMs. Sagita, my sister and her husband are at Galacticon 3 in Houston. Let me know any souvenirs you would like or if you want a picture of Galacticon 3. What? Does he want souvenirs?
I'm just saying, Matt. This seems right up your alley.
Yeah, I'm good.
It's a generous offer.
I'm not. I love that show. I watched it twice. I watched like 140 episodes, 75 or whatever it was, twice. I guess maybe it's 150. But I'm not the type of person who likes like souvenirs from that. I like the product, the derivatives.
And I'm someone who doesn't really have any interest in Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, Matt is almost like vehemently against it.
I haven't seen it.
Unbelievable. Horse Zachary, is it just me or does the term libtard sound more like a slur against libertarians? I don't know. I don't really get that term that much, so I'm not sure who it's for. Silicon Valley. How about that bad apple? Why don't we tell the corporation that they can repatriate their offshore cash as soon as they agree to stop abusing the H-1B visa immigration rules? Well, how about this? How about we tell them they can't, they have to repatriate every year? And how about we tell them that, they can't offshore their investment, their shell companies, et cetera, et cetera. There's plenty we can do. BC985, about you and Cliff Schechter talking about Sudan and Afghan missile strikes. I just quit a quick Google to Wikipedia article. Cruise missile strikes on Afghanistan and Sudan. It was called Operation Infant Reach, retaliation for bombings in Kenya and Tanzania, which killed 224 people. Sam, I heard you say you went all in naming your son Saul Arthur. Maybe you should go all in. Wink, wink. Not sure I follow it. 6815. Usually love what Cliff has to say, but is parroting the condemnation of Al-Awlaki is really disappointing. Scahill's interview on Democracy Now about it required viewing to get a sense of just how screwed up this entire narrative has been. Look, I don't want to speak for Cliff. And I think that I think that short of Jeremy Scahill, very little of what Jeremy Scahill has reported has been disseminated in a wide way. Hold on one second. But I think the issue is we don't know really how Al-Awlaki was targeted or why. We have been told a bunch of stuff. And it may, in fact, be the case that Al-Awlaki is guilty of what the administration claims. But their timeline seems to be a little bit screwy.
And from a process standpoint, it's fine to say that Al-Awlaki did these things, and that if he did these things, he should be targeted. I'm saying, but the problem with that is that there's no process in which we make that determination. And to the extent that we're aware of what the guidelines are, it is so broad, overly broad, the definition of imminent in terms of threat, the definition of associated, the definition, these are so problematic that it's just too broad of a license. So
I wouldn't focus, though. I think of all the issues involved in this program, I think the specific targeting of Al-Awlaki is not the one to go with.
The signature strikes are the most
problematic. That is the prime, undisputable problem with this program and things associated with that. I think regardless of how you interpret what happened with Al-Awlaki, that just is not where I take my stand on this issue, both practically and even morally and strategically. It is objectively a much more ambiguous situation.
It's a much more ambiguous situation insofar as, you know, if Al-Awlaki was on the battlefield and holding a gun, it would be perfectly within the legal framework to kill the guy. It's a lot more questionable as to, what we know about him. But from a policy standpoint, the implications of signature strikes are far broader. The irony is that, and what is sort of, it's also sort of creepy, is that let's say you take those 50 some odd that people in Guantanamo that the United States says are too much of a threat to release, but because we've tortured them in some fashion, we have tainted the evidence against them. It seems to me that it is within the legal framework that is established by the administration. Because if they release these guys, they are, by definition, an imminent threat. That what the administration could do, based upon what they have told us is their disposition matrix, is to release these guys, send them out on a boat into the ocean, and kill them. The only thing that seems to be problematic is that they cannot supposedly capture them. They need to establish they can't capture them without it being threatening the lives of people they would send in to capture them. So I guess like what you do is like you put them in a really dangerous situation and then you go in and kill them according to legal. I mean, that's what's problematic about this.
No, and people have pointed it out that this administration has preferred to kill people because of those sorts of issues associated with it, like Guantanamo. And all of these things are really serious issues. I just think there are some people that are legitimate threats. And Al-Awlaki, I think that there's genuinely enough gray around it. I just, again, I don't think that that's the issue to the
I
case
think
to draw
to a large
these
extent,
lines
people,
around.
I think to a large extent people focus on that issue because it's perceived to be one of the few ways where you can get the American public motivated by this. Because if you're not saying, you know, if you're not talking about the fact that you're talking about American citizens, it is very difficult to get the American public to care about any of it.
Talk about his son. I mean, that is indisputable.
Right. Hope Feld, weed is the new gay. What can Obama do on Gitmo? He could lift the ban on Yemen repatriations. We've already cleared. Yes, and he said that he was going to. He too has the power to have the DEA administratively move marijuana from Schedule 1 to Schedule 2 of controlled substance. Currently, cocaine is a legal drug because Schedule 2 means by law that there are medicinal uses. But by law, weed, no medical purposes. Hopefeld, film recommendation. Watch the 1970 movies again, Lords of Flatbush. Seen it, remember it. Prisoner of Second Avenue with Jack Lemmon. Okay. Nathan Flowers, is it possible for the government to do things which are right for the government to do but also immoral? The scalpel is better than the broad sword. Both are tools for immorality. Yes. I really like the House of Cards. It was like the West Wing meets Damages. It's also a treat to watch Kevin Spacey at his craft. wasn't the best show ever. There'll never be another Battlestar Galactica. Fry Pop Phil, does the fact that a Most Wanted poster was left on the FBI website or the fourth killed American they knew since 2011 qualify as a deception as a cover-up? No, I would imagine that is just more sort of bureaucratic snafu. Umar, sorry, Sam, off topic and late by a couple of days, but I had to address this notion that Islam is intrinsically more violent than other major religions. If a Muslim leader of a predominantly Muslim nation decided to kill Jews partly due to his impression that Jews were responsible for killing Muhammad, and most of the Muslims in the country tacitly or directly supported this, I think most who are judging Islam as intrinsically the most violent religion would have no problem including that as a data point. But then the scales dramatically fall against Christianity when the Holocaust is included. And that happened practically yesterday compared to the 2,000-year history of Christianity. Similar analogy could be done with the Judaism and the violence done in the name of the Jewish state of Israel. As far as violent verses go, even a cursory examination of the web will show any religion, at least the three major monotheistic ones, can be made to look horribly violent by cherry-picking parts of the books. Indeed. Jay Tingle. I have seen Todd at a club in New York City where he did his longer form stuff, and he killed. Can Michael Ian Black be forgiven for his Meghan McCain book? Really? Qualifies as selling out in that he didn't receive pieces of silver in exchange for his soul. And Mark Maron, what's the deal with his hair? What, is there something wrong with Maron's hair? Stop saying you don't know. You know. Notorious Lust, Sam Cedar, puts the moves on Amy Goodman and Jeremy Scalehill at Shindig. Todd Barry Fain surprised that Sam doesn't get a lot of invites. Sam sits alone in the Veselka while all the cool kids order challah French toast at Gem Spa. Lords of Flatbush is very weak, and in similar vein, I recommend The Wanderers, which is allegorical but seeks to explain how the 60s happened. The reason Michael works on Memorial Day is because he hates our fallen heroes. Zep Fox. I wonder how much Obama knows about all that goes on in his administration. Seems many of the troubles in his administration only finds out about after the fact. Like his surprise about learning Al-Awlaki's son was killed. Is this just rhetoric? If real, the impossibility of one person keeping complete control of the huge government or just his inability to do so. I don't not believe it. I look forward to more Eminem episodes. Jamie and Allison said you got upset when they asked whether Battlestar Galactica graphics were dated. Yeah, it misses the point. Carl Sagan, as far as Obama releasing the Yemeni prisoners, I remember hearing that issue addressed on Maddow last Friday. The guest said that there had been a recent regime change. Yes, things are better, supposedly, in Yemen. There were political complications on the Yemeni side because there couldn't be enough faith that the government would sort of keep tabs on these guys appropriately. But still, you know, it's just a question of you can do this at what sort of political risk. In his speech, Obama more or less called the Iraq War a distraction and a misstep. Seems to me an unprecedented occurrence of one president publicly repudiating the foreign policy decisions of his predecessors. What implications does this have, either immediately or how will history look back on this moment? I think based upon what his actions are, it could look back on this in a very significant way. Clower, sexy beast. Best heist flick ever. Sugar High, are you a fan of Louis Buñuel's films? I love Simon of the Desert and The Obscure Object of Desire, both on Hulu Plus. Won't pay for Hulu Plus. Why is it good for a libertarian to convert to being a Democrat? This is politics, not religion. Why can't people be more objective with their opinions? I don't know that I appreciate a libertarian converting to being a Democrat, but I think it's good, and I don't, you know, I don't know if I like the term convert, but I think it's good for a libertarian to realize the fallacy of their economic policies so they can actually start to view policies through a prism of their efficacy, as opposed to through a rigid sort of faith-based doctrine that everything should conform to for the sake of conforming to that doctrine. Kyle, I think it was pretty clear Todd Barry likes Ari Melber more than you. He was practically shouting it. Could be. I'm a little slow in the uptake of that stuff. Shadow Guy, a major Washington State bridge collapse last night. Just FYI, Washington has the most regressive taxing in the country, voted down implementing income tax. M. Cohen, are you friendly with the not safe for work corp guys? You should have on Ames or Yasha Levine on. They're doing some great work. I don't know them. I read their stuff on occasion.
On Max Blumenthal. He works a lot with them, too.
Blumenthal's on there. Yeah, I mean, if I see a good story, I'll pursue the story. Have you seen Max on Netflix? It's about a young Hitler failing as a painter after meeting his Jewish art teacher, who's played by John Cusack. No, I haven't. Maybe I'll check it out. Please check out Mo Brooks, and he will obliterate you and your jokers giving amnesty to illegal analyzing driving here through the border, Jew. I don't think that's a joke. Mo Brooks. Here is a background case against background. Here's a case against back. Critique and analyze this stuff and get your gun control freakish stuff debunked. Send that link to majorityreporters@gmail.com. And why don't you just call in and talk to me about it? Chumox? Yeah, you can call in right now if you want. 646-257-3920. I did a few weeks ago. Oh, did you call me a Jew then? You should really do that on the phone. What does my Jewishness have to do with my illegal immigration position? I really do got to go, but now I'm... All right, well, you're going to have to call in next week. The final message of the day... And I also, Chumox, incidentally. Mo Brooks is a congressional rep. Let me also wish you a happy Shabbat. Hill Silva, I think the IMer is referring to our good friend John from California and his friend that converted to being a Democrat on the Epic Showdown a few days ago. That's the final IM of the week, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back on Tuesday. See you then.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the lie fall. Finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light's shining bright. I guess somewhere the choice was made for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. Shifted in and out of gear, waiting for my moment to happen. I don't know how much longer I can stay in, or how much more I've got to pay to play in. I know somehow